mahalo for listening to KKCR, Hanawe, K-A-E-W-A. Definitely the station that loves you. Welcome back, Marshall.
Hey, Felicia, great to be here.
Yeah, yay!
Hey, thanks, y'all.
Marshall's been gone for a while. Thanks, Shaw. Thanks, Garden. Homegrown Garden Island Bluegrass Show. I'm getting... That's us. That's them.
Have you been holding it down, Felicia?
I've been holding it down. Jake's been helping me hold it down while you have abandoned me.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you know, always... I know how to do throw some guilt there.
And I have learned how to pay
just
no attention.
It.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Today, I think we're going to have a really great show. Hope Kalai is our first guest, and we're going to have a handful of people who called last Friday. A lot's been going on since you've been gone, Marshall.
That's what I heard.
A lot of stuff dealing with water. Hopefully, we can come up with some solutions. And having community dialogue and community understanding is one good way of doing it. You know, all across the islands, we have to work on our water issues and managing our water in ways that maybe we have been able to be negligent for, you know, 100 years or more. And it's kind of like, you know, having a bad diet for the first 3 or 4 decades of your life.
Yeah,
you can
really
get away with it, but then after a while, you know, you kind of got to deal with it.
I'm glad you're looking for solutions because, you know, I was paying as much attention as I could from 5,000 miles away, and it looks like it's come to a head.
I think that we hit a really critical break point. So we're going to spend our first hour talking about that. And in the second hour, Kim Koko Iwamoto, who is running for lieutenant governor. I had my first real solid conversation with her today. I've seen some of the things that she's done, but she will be our guest in the second hour.
Okay.
And you know, I'm really super happy with what our show is today. And I thank the listeners, and I really thank the supporters of this station that makes this volunteer-led, listener-supported program and station stay on the air. And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So we are going to be talking about the Board of Land and Natural Resources meeting, and our friend Hope Kalai, I'm sure, is going to be here any moment. But just kind of giving a little context for that. A lot of times people don't know a lot about public policy, and their eyes can kind of fade over and zone when even we start using, you know, intensive words. So on this program, we have kind of a combination of people who are really super ma'a or sharp on all these details, and then some that are a little bit more practical and pragmatic just in regular life. So I'm going to try and put this in context. I mean, at the specific level, there's something called a revocable permit. Kauai Island Utility Cooperative, which is our power company that... Pardon me?
Often known as KIUC.
KIUC, our power company, Kauai Island Utility Cooperative. They have been the beneficiary of a diversion for over 100 years up in the North Fork of the Wailua River. There are historic hydro plants that have been there for probably a couple, like 100 years. And Hope, you can jump in at any time here if you would like to. So they've been up there for about 100 years. And just so people can visualize what it is there are essentially like two rain gutters that cut from that area that we call Blue Hole on Waialiali Stream. There's 6 streams. It comes down like, as you see where the water streams down the mountain, it hits what is essentially like a rain gutter ditch, and it comes and it feeds one of those power plants, and about a half a mile below it is another rain gutter ditch.
And those are made of what, like concrete or?
Concrete.
Concrete.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so they put in sort of concrete ditches like you might see along a highway or something.
Right.
Picks up the water, puts it into more ditch work.
Right.
And then what with the stream?
So it goes into the hydro plants that produce maybe 1 to 2% of our power.
Okay.
And what another piece that we have been learning over the past couple of years, and I invite Hope to jump in on me anytime that she wants here, but what I think is really important is for people to understand how the structure of the rock of this island is. In a lot of places, it's like a giant icy or piece of pumice. So when you visualize water slowly coming down the mountain in natural streams, it's got a lot of different places where it's going to be running into.
Mm-hmm.
And when you put it in a concrete ditch, or even an earthen ditch, but you run it very quickly, goes to these power plants, it could potentially go back into the stream where it comes out of. But...
No,
actually, it really couldn't.
It could not. It's moved 6 miles and 600 feet downslope.
Even if you do the stable storm ditch, you can't bring it back?
Nope.
Okay.
It would not be financially feasible. You'd spend $1 billion to move that water back to its stream of origin. The powerhouses are located way too far from... It's a 6 mile ditch to get to the powerhouses. Five or six miles.
So... right below where the water diversion is, until a recent augmentation of the concrete that was put there in the 90s, pretty much 100% of the water went away on moderate to low rainfall days. And even now, when the rainfall is low, the water flow is low, it still gets 100% diversion. Is that correct, Hope?
Well, the correct term is base flow. And base flow is what's happened when it's not raining. But everybody knows it rains on Waialae every day. So base flow is a fair weather flow.
Okay.
It's not a big precip event. It's not a storm event. It's not a drought. It's a base flow. And the KIUC ditch, the water captures on the top of the mountain on the Alakai, on the swamp. They call it a swamp. Really, it's not. And then there's all these lava tubes and fingers, and the crater, the bowl of Waialae, sprouts water from rock. And depending on what's going on the top, water falls here and water falls there, and sometimes water just pops out of the rock when it's not raining, and sometimes when it's raining, the waterfalls stand up. It looks like they're 10 feet out of their channels. But the water comes from the back wall of Waialae. It only lasts for about a mile and a half. And then it hits this concrete slug.
This rain gutter.
Well, like the dam poured in the middle of the stream channel is full of rebar and wire mesh and concrete. And it's a big old concrete, massive, I don't know how many cubic yards of concrete were poured in the forest in the live stream channel. But there's this big old dam, and then most people don't, when I say big old dam, it's not like the Hoover Dam in the 100 feet high.
No.
It's a massive amount of concrete poured in a live stream channel, and then right off to one side there's a ditch. And the dam itself captures 100% of the base flow and shoves it into this ditch. The ditch used to have gate valves and control valves on it because the plantation that was managing this water for the 80 years or so, they never needed 100% of the stream flow of Waialae, North Fork, Wailua.
They probably still don't need 100%.
No. The only thing the plantation needed was to run their mill and their plantation camp. They had no need, no intention, no purpose to generate power for the whole island. So it was a localized plantation need, and they could control. They didn't need all the water in the world. They didn't need all the power in the world. They only needed what they needed. And so there was this mechanism called a gate valve with a spinning kind of valve that you turn, but it drops a thing like a garage door. And so with this garage door kind of thing in the middle of the ditch, you could moderate how much water you needed at the powerhouses. And the water you didn't need was shunted back into, it was a ditch that's perpendicular to the ditch that goes to the hydro, and the perpendicular ditch is called a throwout, and it takes it back and puts it back into the river. So the throwout is about maybe 50 or 75 feet downstream of the dam. And what we were proposing was that the state put water back into the North Fork through the throwout just by taking out some dam boards, and there could be stream flow in the North Fork Wailua within minutes, except for about that 50 or 75 feet from the dam to where the throwout ditch enters.
And it pretty much could happen on all six of these pieces. So just bringing the listener back.
Well, each one has to happen individually.
Yes, I understand that.
Right.
Each one has to happen individually.
Six pieces of what?
There's six different streams that are basically the water is collected off six different little ahupua'as along there. And can you name them, please, Hope?
The first one that the ditch crosses is Waikoko. And the permit actually considers Waikoko waters also. So it's 100% capture of Waikoko. The next major big stream coming down is Ili'ili'ula. And Ili'ili'ula is probably almost as big as the North Fork. It's a pretty substantial-sized stream. There's Waiaka, Iole, and Waiahi is the hydropower plants are located on Waiahi Stream. There's a bunch of little unnamed rivulets that come into the ditch, too, that nobody really knows the name of.
So a piece I think that is really important that has bothered me for quite some time, especially as we are reporting the contention on KKCR, because we get a lot of calls in about why that water is a powerful impact downstream, particularly to the Hawaiian community and the Department of Hawaiian Homelands. Kauai Island Utility Cooperative takes all the heat on that. But when we look at the map, and there is a map posted right on my Facebook wall for people who are home and they want to do their homework, they've been told ahead of time, they can be looking at this map and they can see that what we're talking about isn't conjecture, isn't false information. This is actually what does happen. And so the majority of that water, and Hope I'm going to let you jump in again on this, really goes on to the sewage treatment plant, the surface water treatment plant at the Waiahi Reservoir, and it is then taken over by Grove Farm. Do you want to embellish on that, Hope?
Well, after the two hydropower plants, the water is put back into Hanamalu Ditch, and then there's a system of diversions that take water from... Did I say Hanamalu Ditch?
You did.
I'm sorry. After below Waiahi Power Plant, it goes into what is now the South Fork of Wailua River. And the South Fork is intercepted by a series of ditches, including the Hanamalu Ditch. And the Hanamalu Ditch takes water from the South Fork and takes it to Kapaya Reservoir, which is an impoundment made on Hanamalu Stream. That there is now, right next to Kapaya Reservoir, a surface water treatment plant. It's been online since 2004, and the county buys 3 million gallons a day of processed surface water that they chlorinate and sell as drinking water, potable water.
So when we went over to the Board of Land and Natural Resources meeting on Friday on Oahu, there was probably, I'd say, 10 to 12 Kauai citizens who were concerned and in opposition to this permit. Even though it's a revocable permit, it is important because it's ahead of a 65-year lease that's under consideration. There was a number of people from Kauai Island Utility Cooperative. I didn't see anybody there from Grove Farm, but what is so important, I think, is that Grove Farm is at least as much of a beneficiary as is the power company. And for the power company, this is like 1 to 2% of their business model, whereas for Grove Farm, having this piece of water and the transmission of the water, it's at least a couple million dollars a year of business, And more importantly, it's access to how land is developed because of the water. So what was very apparent is that the Board of Land and Natural Resources, for the most part, seemed really uninformed about what was going on there.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. They didn't even have a copy of the permit that they were considering renewing. They didn't have a map. They had a schematic. And they knew nothing about the Pupu Vailani, the Newcomb snail. I mean, really, it was pretty pathetic. And this revocable permit, it's been going on. It's a month-to-month, a 30-day permit. And it's been diverting water in the guise of these permits are only supposed to be for 1 year. And if they want a longer water use, it's supposed to be converted to a lease. So that's why they went in and asked for a 65-year lease. The lease conversion has certain conditions that they are supposed to fulfill, but they haven't really started them. So we're still in the month-to-month revocable permit. Last year there was an act passed, Act 126, that makes a sunset date for these permits that go on forever and ever. And it's still a one-year permit, but they can do it 3 years.
And they've done it 14 now?
Well, this act was just passed last year. Yeah, it's been held over, actually, since 2001, so it's really about 16 years. But they went in, they were told last year that they had to have everything completed, all the studies and everything done, within 3 years.
So what I found when I was watching the presentation and listening to people who are arguing it's no big deal, it's a mile and a half that runs dry, and that these animals can make it up and life forms can make it up and down somewhere else, so that it was not that much of a concern. That mile and a half, it's a lot more than just that the mile and a half of the stream is dry. It's basically drying up a whole region down below where all this water was meant to be, which includes the Department of Hawaiian Homelands, ag lands, and as we learned a few county council meetings ago, the water that is denied to the houses, that's also available. So this has really been a takeaway from the Hawaiian community, many on the wait list for, you know, their lifetime. This is a decades-long problem. And it really is solvable. And if they wanted to be putting the water back in the river, from going up there and looking, they really could just pull a few boards out.
That's it. And it was August 16th in 2007 that DHHL was told that there isn't enough water in Wailua for Hawaiians. And so they had to develop their own water source. So they first had to get money and drill exploratory wells, and then production wells. So it's been really an 8 or so year process for them to develop their own independent water source. And that was in 2007. In 2006, the surface water treatment plant water reached Wailua Bridge and was distributed throughout Kapaa. So a year before they were told there wasn't enough water for them, the ditch water was available to all the people, really, from Kapaa to Puhi.
And, you know, the information you put on your Facebook page, Felicia, is great. It's a lot of information, this whole issue, to get a handle on, but having the maps and having some photos and having some explanations there, so I'd recommend taking a look. Felicia Longicalden. I also went ahead and posted it to the KKCR Facebook group.
Okay, that's great. And we also Facebook lived the event from there, so people could go in a few days back. If they go back to Friday, they can watch the testimony and they could watch what happened. And Hope, I want to bring it to a little bit about, like, what I felt that I saw was true. I think it was authentic. You know, a lot of times you think, oh, you know, but I think they really didn't know. They really honestly didn't know.
Clueless.
That Grow Farm was using, like, something like, what is it, like, the diversion is probably 30 million gallons. A lot of it goes back into the ocean, but it means it doesn't stream down on, they could be putting what they put in the ocean in Hanamaʻulu, they could be putting that back into the aquifer. It's not like we're trying to take water away from Lihue. we're trying to not dump the excess water in Lihue. We need to be bringing it back down into the Wailua aquifer, correct?
Right. The Wailua wells, the groundwater wells level is falling. And we have a massive exportation out of the Ahupua'a of the surface water. So the groundwater is not recharging because the surface water is going someplace else. We have a real problem here. And not the surface water treatment plant doesn't have any surface water use permits or monthly metering or monitoring to CoWorm. So there's no accountability.
That's the Commission on Water Resource Management. And this area that the water is being taken from is considered a conservation district. And you said something really poignant at that meeting. You said, if this area of Wai'ali'ali right up there at the top is not worth protecting, I don't know what is, right? Or nothing is sacred. You said something to that effect. And I could see that it really moved the board, because most of the time we think, no big deal. It's just this little piece of water that's being moved. But this is having decades-long problem. I do have some of the recording loaded. I'm going to see if the computer will let me play it out, you know, in a way that the listeners can hear. This is a piece with the people doing the study are talking about the water and the Newcomb snail and what's going on there. This is just a little bit. And then what I think is really interesting is Suzanne Case, who is the chair of the Board of Land and Natural Resources in the Department of Land and Natural Resources. She's the cousin of Steve Case, who owns Grove Farm. Now, I'm not trying to make Grove Farm or Steve Case in the wrong, but the thing is that is a very strong conflict of interest. She even calls it out here in this piece that we're going to be hearing, yet she voted. Yet she voted. And then I would like to, if it's good with you, I'd like to play some of the vote and some of the talking points, see if...
So who is this that we'll hear speaking, and where are they speaking?
It's Suzanne Case, who's the chairperson of the Board of Land and Natural Resources for the Department of Land and Natural Resources. And I believe it's Aaron Strouch, who is a hydrologist for the Commission on Water Resources Management. And he's been doing some of the in-stream flow stuff, I believe.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm gonna play this piece. I want to see if the computer will play it.
Of the stream below this diversion is dry?
Basically, do you see where the confluence is between the West Branch and then the Mahia stream?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, between the diversion and that confluence, about two-thirds of it is pretty dry. The last third, there's a gain of about 2 CFS from spring water.
Cubic feet per second.
That's the most affected stretch.
And how far is that
home? Linear distance, it's less than a mile. It's not.
And is this the diversion where there was some vandalism before?
Correct.
Is there water coming through there?
Depends on the flow of the day. Mm-hmm. Lower flows, I don't believe so, but medium-high flows, yes.
Okay. And then the water from here goes through a ditch to the hydro plant. Looks like it's on Grove farmland.
I believe so.
And then another one, lower powerhouse, which is also on Grove. So is Grove Farm a beneficiary of this?
They do not. I don't know their agreements with KIUC.
They're not using the water, but they maybe they have an agreement with KIUC about the plant.
I don't know these things.
I just want to make a disclosure then. My cousin is the owner of Grove Farm, so I don't have anything to do with this. I don't have any benefit or anything.
So I just want to put that in there because I think that's important. I appreciated that she mentioned that she was she mentioned her conflict of interest. We also had Tommy Oy, who is the Kauai person, he has a pretty big conflict of interest in that, or he disclosed. He didn't say it was a conflict of interest, but he disclosed that, one of his main contracts and employers is
Grove Farm.
We have a quick call that I'm going to take, because we're going to take a question. Yes, you're on the air.
Hey, Felicia. Hey, so about a month or so ago, there was a major flash flood up there, and it pushed all sorts of small rocks, even really large boulders, into the actual diversion.
Yeah.
So the water flow for the last month, I was just up there a couple of days ago and it's still filled in, has been going about 100% into the natural flow. And so I was wondering if Hope has seen any, or if they know anything about how that's affected grow farm operations, or if that's affected the groundwater in the Wailua area at all.
Well, thank you, caller, for letting us know the road's open.
Because it is flowing 100% from that diversion into the natural watershed at the moment, and it has been for about a month.
So I want to say something on that, too, and thank you for this call. So I'm going to take the answer off air, but thank you for that. What Dave Bissell did say when he was asked is if it, you know, disrupts their power production when they have less water, and he said, not by much, but it would be very important to know about that grow farm answer, because I don't know that. Do you have an answer to that question?
Which?
Well, he was saying, hey, if almost 100% is going down the natural stream flow right now because of the rocks, maybe they get enough from the other five rivers?
They do. They do. When the acts of vandalism happened, they didn't even know. Until the guys went up there. There wasn't even a bump in their power production, is what the maintenance guys said. I was up there when they found the damage, and they hadn't realized that there was any, because this does happen often. It's a really dynamic system, and stuff happens, and boulders plug up the ditches, and that's why keeping that road open is so critically important, and keeping those safety mechanisms on the ditch. Right now, there are no gate valves, and there's no way to turn that water off. So,
and you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. Just one second. Kauai Soapbox, I have Hope Kalai in here. Is Marge on the phone?
She sure is.
Okay, Marge, before you come on the phone, I got to take this quick because I've got some calls lined up, and we have a lot more information we want to share out. But aloha, you're on the air.
Okay, I just got back from the monthly KIUC board meeting, and the Jolie group representatives were there and gave a report at what happened at the DLNR meeting, and they have some suggestions for the board to work on as a result of the board's issues that came up at that meeting that KIUC is going to have to deal with. So what they want to do, and they're proposing this to KIUC, to institute temporary flow releases at Blue Hole. They've started on the design work on the flow release for temporary, but they want to do more long-term, not just to for this proposal that they're trying to get for 1 year. They are proposing more gauging needed to provide water for some of the worms, the sea worms. Is that what they are?
They're slugs. Sure. They're snails.
Yeah, yeah. And to
endangered. It's called the Newcomb snail or the Pupu Vailani. It's an endangered species.
Right.
Critical habitat.
So they're doing some engineering on this, and they're gathering quotes for the equipment and what it's going to cost to install them. And they also want to do repairs as needed at the same time. And they're estimating that this cost is now going to be between $100,000 to $125,000 to institute their plans for trying to deal with the issues that got brought up at that meeting.
Yes, there was three directives that came. I was about to play that from what came as an outcome of this meeting, but I'm happy to be talking about that too. Like, so it was that they need to be returning water to the stream, and a relationship with DHHL. Hope, do you want to jump in on that?
And they need to start working on a watershed management study.
Okay. Hello.
Yes, can you hear us?
Yeah, okay. Just so you, because you have other people calling in. Another person came to this meeting that comes there often, but not that often as I, and his comments about this whole thing. And he's a very, very articulate Akamai person, lived here a long time. And he said that Grow Farm and A&B are stealing the water and have been for a long, long time. Why are we allowing this to happen?
So was that somebody from the board, or was that somebody from the public?
No, this is a person this is a member of our co-op who came to testify against this water situation, stealing the water, diverting the water. And he said that, you know, none of us can live without this water. And for it to be changed in any way is going to be met with tremendous opposition, and so the KIUC should stop whatever plans that they have to divert this water for any hydro project. Now, this guy is I'm not going to give his name. He's well respected in the community, been around for a long time, and he's at least my age, which is on the older scale. So I just want to let you know that this whole thing discussion at the meeting today occupied at least a half an hour of their time.
Well, that's good, and that's appropriate, and I felt that what we were hearing from the board, especially Hawaii Island Stan Roerig, if I'm saying his name right, you know, they are saying, wow, you know, all this time the Board of Land and Natural Resources members had no idea that Grow Farm was a recipient of this water. And when this permit is just being placed there for KIUC, our power company, it's really not, you know, an honest conversation. It's not accurate. There should be duality in that permit. Certainly the money is still going to get passed on to the customers. Right now, what was being stated is that Grow Farm must be getting this water without paying anything to the state. And there's water the cost of that water is supposed to be going back into the public trust, 30% of which is supposed to be going to the Hawaiian community, if I understand that correctly also. So,
to DHHL.
To DHHL. Yeah. So Department of Hawaiian Homelands. And thank you for sharing that. And the paper and even the nightly news really understated the role of the big landowners. And it is a water grab. It's a control grab that happens, because as you take the water out of one area, you can't develop that area in the same way for farms or whatever. And it is hard on the aquifer. So thank you for calling in that report.
Right, and KIUC is saying that this whole application can be grandfathered in. That is one of their firm positions.
Well,
that they're operating on.
I think the courts will decide. And 17158 is really clear.
What is 17? It's a Hawaii revised statute. It's a law.
Yep, it's a law, and it list the process for getting these water leases, the permanent water leases. And right now it's not even worth pushing the point about a conservation district use permit on a 30-day use, because that's all they have, is a 30-day use permit extended for another year. But the 65-year lease process is really specific about a conservation district use permit application, an accepted EIS,
environmental impact statement,
a habitat conservation plan with incidental take permit. And KIUC is really familiar with both of those because of the seabird take and the fact that they pled guilty to in HRS 343 environmental fines. They had to prepare a habitat conservation plan and an incidental take permit and pay big fines for the damage to protected species. Here we are again. We got protected species. We got designated critical habitat. KIUC is the recipient of federal funds, so there's a federal nexus on this project, and they haven't done their required studies. So it's going to be you and me and the whole community who has to pay these fines. And they should be listening to their beneficiaries. And the fact that they want to divert 100% of the base flow of the water from Waialeale for the next 65 years, I really don't think most of their power users know that that's what the true cost of turning on their lights is.
And for 1% to 2%. Marge, thank you so much for calling in.
You bet. Well, everybody who's listening, stay tuned and get involved. This is a very, very key issue. Thanks, guys, for such a great program.
Aloha. Thank you. And the ramifications are quite deep. So, hey, and Marshall just pointed out to me that he got an email. He just received an email from Kauai Island Utility Cooperative.
Yeah, just about 10 minutes ago, I'm assuming they sent this out to all their members, and the headline is KIUC Board Authorizes Actions Related to Wailua River Diversions. I think it's worth reading at least a little bit of it.
Okay, and then you can put Bridget on the line, too, if she's sitting there.
Okay, here we go.
So she knows that she's on. So, Bridget, we're going to listen to this email that KIUC sent out to the members.
It was sent out about 10 minutes ago. The Kauai Island Utility Cooperative Board today authorized KIUC President and Chief Executive Officer David Bissell to make changes to the ditch system to return water to the North Fork of the Wailua River at the Blue Hole and Waikoko diversions.
Yay!
Woo!
This action will ensure that water is flowing immediately downstream of the diversions. The board also authorized the commencement of engineering design for permanent diversion modifications to ensure continuous stream flow for aquatic habitat. Construction will take place upon approval from the appropriate regulatory agencies. Additionally, approval was granted to install additional gauging stations to increase data collection and understanding of the hydrology of the system. There's a quote. I think that's the most pertinent part.
What's the quote?
It says, quote by KIUC Chair Alan Smith, the hydros have been producing energy on Kauai for more than 100 years and represent an important piece of KIUC's renewable portfolio and will help us reach the state's mandate of 100% renewables by 2045. On December 8th, the State Board of Land and Natural Resources met and approved the holdover of a revocable permit for water use at the Blue Hole diversion, which contribute 1.5 megawatts of energy to the island's renewable portfolio.
So that's about a 1%, but I think, you know, there's value in holding on to a historic piece like those hydro plants.
I totally believe that they should stay operational. Or one or both of them, but only using Waiahi stream only water. So it could be returned to the stream of origin. The water use would be truly non-consumptive, and there is a alteration in the chemistry of the water after it passes through two hydros. So it is changed, but actually that could be settled out in, they call it an after bay. So if there was just a little settling pond, the water restructures before it's put back into the river.
And I believe, Bridget, are you on the line with us?
I am, Felicia.
Okay.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Hey, and
Aloha.
I want to just tell you, thank you for your really good presentation. Hope and Bridget, I want to give a shout out to Loke, Mahuiki, Debbie Jackson, Annie Frederick, Marty Townsend, Sharon and Kip Goodwin. There was a lot of people there. Who spoke very well. And you and Eileen, thank you so much for being there. What is your mana'o on what we're discussing?
Well, I'm very excited about that announcement that just came out from KIUC's board to their co-op members.
Mm-hmm.
It's huge.
Huge.
Can you believe that in one afternoon?
Wow.
In the testimony we gave, not only was there a huge light shown on an issue that's been kept undercover for a long time, but they heard us so clearly that they know they're wrong. In fact, Mr. Bissell did tell me on the plane on the way home, we know that dry riverbeds are not a good thing. But at the same time, there was no indication this action that was just approved today was in any way going to be taken but for our contingent going to Oahu with organized presentation, wonderful PowerPoint that was made by Hope. Thank you, Hope. Wonderful pictures. Pictures with large land or earth-moving equipment right down in the habitat, scooping out rock and debris. No permit to do that. No Section 7 consult with U.S. Fish and Wildlife. No regard for the biota or the biology creature, biological creatures and plants that were getting impacted. The little Pupu Vailani snail is something that was very regarded highly by Hawaiians, and it is something that's designated as a critical species, an endangered species in a critical habitat. So it took all of us. It took a big effort, and I'm very excited and very pleased to see the action taken by the board today.
Yeah, I want to just take a moment to very clearly say thank you, Kauai Island Utility Cooperative, for being responsive to the community concern and taking what I would call rapid response.
Mm-hmm.
If they made that decision the very next working day, I want to commend them and just really acknowledge that on the air.
And especially for putting that news out during our show. That's pretty effective.
Might have been a coincidence,
yeah.
But yeah. Yeah.
Okay. It's absolutely wonderful.
Perfect.
It's absolutely wonderful,
yeah.
And it's huge.
It is huge.
Now the third directive that they were given by the board members, that, you know, they wanted some in-stream flow back. They felt the river shouldn't be dry. The board members told them that. They also wanted them to meet with DHHL.
Department of Hawaiian Homelands.
And, the Hawaii Department of Hawaiian Homelands. And work toward meeting the Hawaiian community's reservation, its need for water. So they pretty much told them they don't get to do nothing over the next year. They need to get on it. And they spelled out three things. Their studies, their environmental studies, which included it's an environmental impact study according to the statute. One of the board members kept referring to an environmental assessment. But the statute that deals with water leases does not include an environmental assessment like some of the 343 triggers do. It's specifically limited to EIS.
So an environmental
study's done.
Environmental
they want
impact.
Watershed management done.
Let's let the listener know, because acronyms are hard. An environmental impact study is more thorough than an environmental assessment.
And basically, an environmental assessment is something that the applicant puts together themselves about their project, right? And they tell the agency what their view or their take on the environmental impact is likely to be. And then they typically get to the point where they say that it's of limited or no significance. So if it's more than that, then they're supposed to move on to an environmental impact study, because that's typically done by an independent source with engineers, hydrologists, specialists, who actually go in and find out what's happening to the environment from this activity. But here's what I was trying to get to, if I may, Felicia, is KIUC is absolutely doing the right thing. I'm not sure how much they're motivated to do that, to kind of try to dim that light that we've shown on the issue. But the really big elephant in the room is what the gentleman told the board today, the water grab by Grow Farm and A&B. And just today, I saved all of the minutes from the board KIUC, I mean, not KIUC, excuse me, Kauai Water Department, board minutes, committee minutes, agendas going back to 2006, because it's quite clear that their relationship with Grow Farm is that they feel Grow Farm owns the water and that they have to buy it from Grow Farm. They even have minutes, as Hope knows, that refer to what happens if Grow Farm decides to sell the water to somebody else. And here's the reality that's been decided by the Hawaii Supreme Court in more than one Supreme Court decision, and that is that these waters that come from rain-fed streams or groundwater that's taken in from rainfall on the mountains, they're waters of the state. They are not owned by the landowner over whose land the water happens to pass. And that piece of law has been articulated by the Hawaii State Supreme Court on at least five huge decisions that I'm aware of, as recent as the Kauai Springs case. And so this is not something that Grove Farm has a right to. And they don't have a right to sell it to the county. And as Hope will tell you, one of the conditions of this revocable permit, condition 22B, specifically says that Grove Farm may not charge co-op members for the water. But what are they really doing? When they bill the county for water, and then the county bills co-op members, is that not Grove Farm charging co-op members for the water that's waters of the state? So it's a real, real large issue, to say the least. And I just offer that perhaps KIUC is, in doing the right thing, in part motivated perhaps by Grove Farm, to hurry up and take the focus off this issue. Give the people what they want in the North Fork and South Fork of the Wailua so they stop looking in our direction on these other water diversions that are also 100% of the base flow and which marry up with the waters that go through the hydro and then go to the surface water treatment plant that just happens to be owned by Grove Farm for water that will just happen to be sold to the Kauai Water Department.
So, you're a lawyer. I know that you're retired, but just help me with this. Like, when there are six streams, only two of which have a permit, and there is no conservation district use permit for any of that water to Grove Farm, what consequence do the people have to get to force the fact that Grove Farm needs to have a CDUP, a conservation district use permit? And
Grove Farm's land is ag.
So, but, yeah,
if
but
Grove, if
they
Grove
don't have
Farm
a surface
still
water
using
use
water
permit.
For an agricultural purpose, Felicia.
Okay,
that would be a different story. But in Waioli 1 and 2, those are two of the first Supreme Court cases that came out, and Hope is up on this as much as I am, and then Navajea on Maui, another Hawaii State Supreme Court case. The court pretty clearly articulated that many of these diversions were actually built and put in place before statehood. And they were done to get water to a massive ditch network that fed hundreds of thousands of acres of sugar cane. However, the court said once sugar ceased and that agricultural use for the diversion ceased, the diversions were supposed to be taken down, or at least a percentage, a significant percentage of flow was to be restored to the stream of origin, to the flow path that was there and was intended.
Well, they all have to be reworked for the
they all
current
have to be reworked
for the
and
current
that
water use.
On Maui.
Yeah, and the current water use is not furrow flood irrigation of 7,000 acres of sugarcane. Now the current use is a surface water treatment plant for commercial sales of water.
Right.
And that has no surface water use permits, and the fact that it's removed from our water math, but we have no numbers to plug in. It's the elephant
no,
in the closet.
No, because nobody knows how much they're taking.
Right.
They don't report on those diverters a quantity to the state with any reliable flow studies to say what they've actually taken out. And this isn't just happening on those four other streams from that are fed by Mount Waialeale. We have the Hule'ia, which is a big stream diversion, mauka of the tree tunnel area in coming into Kaloa. And that was built in 1957, you know, 2 years before statehood even. And that was for Kaloa sugar. Now, Kaloa sugar's been gone since 1996. And they've never taken down any part of the diversion. They've never even tried to restore some flow. So you can imagine that with what we put on in Honolulu last Friday, I can't help say it any other way. We shined a huge spotlight on a big, big issue. And it's an issue of improper grab of state waters of Hawaii. The Kanaka Maoli, the Hawaiian community, has been suffering because they can't grow their kalo. They have stale water. The people of Kauai suffer because that water's lost to the general use of the public. The Kauai County Water Department is being made to pay Grove Farm for the water. And one of the things that the former director had intended, David Craddock, when he proposed drilling into the side...
With the horizontal drill, the horizontal well?
Yeah, horizontal drill, right. And correct me if I'm wrong, but was that going into Mount Kahili?
Yeah.
No, really.
It was going into Waialeoli.
Kahili?
But it started at Kahili and went into Waialeoli, if I remember correctly.
Well, however
it was going to go, it was actually a rather well-engineered plan. They didn't have a good PR person to explain it to the public. But what they would have done was they would have tapped into waters of the state above Grove Farm property, above Grove Farm land. They would not have had to pay Grove Farm 10 cents.
And
they would have gained control over what waters actually Grove Farm got to use.
Yes.
And in many who are in the Akamai world of development, view what Grove Farm is doing now with these giant reservoirs at Keahi and Waitā as an effort to water bank, is the term they use, water bank for their future development, because they've become a land development company. They're selling property, putting in golf courses, making water features. Whatever they want to do, they want the water there for the Grove Farm land, but that's not in keeping with the state law. And what we did last week, as you remember, Felicia, Director Case kept saying, this is only about diversion 713 and 716. This isn't about the other four diversions. The problem with that was that both Mr. Bissell and the Seaworm staff acknowledged that the four diversions that come from Grove Farm land mix with the two that are on state land, Waikoko and Blue Hole. And there's no way to separate out what's going through the hydro that's state land diversion versus Grove Farm diversion. And ultimately, what's in it for Grove Farm? Well, they get over 90% of it back. So they get not only what they've diverted that they share with the hydro plant, but they get water from Blue Hole and Waikoko. And there's three connections. I don't know if you got that out earlier, Hope, but Adam taught me about the Upper Lahui Ditch, the Lower Lahui Ditch, and the Hanama'ulu Ditch. And those are all controlled by Grove Farm. And in fact, the Upper Lahui Ditch is totally plumbing. It's literally a huge infrastructure of pipe that carries it right from the hydro plant to Grove Farm's operation over the Lahui Basin. So it's a mighty big issue, and it's just wonderful what KIUC is doing, and I'm so pleased that they heard their co-op members. I'm so pleased. But the message is, I don't think we can afford to stop here. I think we have to really gain control of the state water and get it back under the law.
So in that, you know, when Dave Craddock, I did a show with him too, and we were talking about this horizontal drill, and I went to those water meetings, and definitely the Kanakamaoli community came out and said that they didn't like it. But what also happened is that the Board of Water changed and shifted, and Dave Craddock was, who had been doing a really good job and he had an incredible background, he was removed from office with just the tiniest little paragraph in the paper and was gone in like a week. And his phone number was changed, everything. He was like eliminated from the island. And then they go, okay, we're listening to the Hawaiian community and we're not going to do it. But when I looked, that Board of Water was pretty Grove Farm friendly. And that's why, like I have been a bit resistive since that point and a lot of these different issues that come up. It's not that I think Grove Farm is bad. I think that Grove Farm, they're doing business the way business people can often do business. But I have trouble when they're populating all these different boards and commissions and the council, and, you know, that there's relatives and pieces. It's just infiltrated in the power structure. So, you know, it isn't a fair...
Well, it's really scary because where Suzanne Case tried to steer us away from focusing on Grove Farm at all, even though there's four diversions that are getting mixed with the very same water that this permit that we went over on is to cover. Okay. You know, why did she steer us away? Could it be because her first cousin owns Grove Farm? And could it be because she doesn't want the light shown on these massive water banking efforts of Grove Farm and water diversion efforts of Grove Farm? I mean, you really have to wonder. And then Tommy Oy, you know, his affiliation with Grove Farm, both of them probably should not have even voted
right
on the temporary.
Right.
Basically, it's, I call it temporary because it's a revocable permit month to month for the term of a year, for the limited term of a year, and then they have to go back again by December of next year. I don't really think, you know, as a member of the public and even from my legal experience, I don't think they should have had any part in the vote, because it's the idea of a conflict of interest is that you're supposed to, as an agency head, avoid the appearance of impropriety. And since it became so clear that Grove Farm Water is used by the holder of the revocable permit they were to act on, boy, I think it's a tough call to say that they could weigh in
right
without direct conflict.
And Grove Farm, this water, this, if they did not have this water, that's a central part of their business model, where the 1, maybe 2% of power for KIUC, it's a small part. So I'd say Grove Farm...
Very small part. In fact, when asked by board members, Felicia, I'm sorry, I jumped in here, but they asked them if there would even be a noticeable impact to the delivery of power on Kauai if that
was
diversion
offline. Mm-hmm.
Went offline for a period of time to allow stream restoration and to assess the biological improvement and, you know, basically figure out with DHHL what they needed and, you know, just take a month off, they said, and see what happens. And they wanted to know from Mr. Bissell, who I think was an honest participant, you know, what would it do? And he said, oh, I'm not sure we'd even notice it. And that's true, because that 1.5 megawatts, it's so negligible. I mean, we have a solar system across the street here in Kailua that's putting out 8 or 9 megawatts, right? And, I mean, 1.5 megawatts, it is truly just 1% of the island's power need. And there's a lot of people who wanted to put in solar panels on their home, and KIUC some time ago suspended the power sharing agreements with private residents. They
right
said they couldn't sign up any more solar systems.
Though I want to do point out the obvious argument on that is the water runs at night and the sun doesn't. You're listening to KKCR, Hanalei KAQA, Kilauea. This is Kauai's Soapbox with Felicia and Marshall. Hope Kalai is in the studio. Bridget Hammerquist is on the phone. The three of us went to the Board of Land and Natural Resources meeting last Friday, and we are discussing what came up with the water diversion for the North Fork of the Wailua River, and this has precedent in other areas. Bridget, I have a caller who would like to ask you a question. Can I take that?
Sure.
Okay, let's put that person on.
Actually, I have the question.
Oh, you have the question. Okay.
A listener did want to ask about a long-running lawsuit, the state versus Robinson. She said it's been going on for about 70 years, and it's about the state asserting their ownership of the water against Robinson family as a landowner. Are you familiar with that?
You know, I'm not, Marshall.
Okay.
I'm not.
Okay, well, that would be interesting to look at.
Yeah, it will be. But I'm not surprised because, you know, my dad used to work at Old Kelly Sugar, and I lived at Kamakani. And that was, of course, a Robinson plantation that the Robinsons took back over. They had just leased it to C. Brewer. And it's the way they look, these sugar companies look at that water that was underneath, like in the case of Kamakani, they drilled into the lens to bring water to the community, and they feel that's their water. But it really isn't. Not according to the Constitution of the State of Hawaii and not according to Hawaii Revised Statute Section 171.58. And then, of course, the Supreme Court in the Hanapepi decision and in Nawahea, Wailua 1 and 2, Kauai Springs, all of those Supreme Court decisions articulate over and over and over that these are waters of the state. And we just have to get that message through to the former sugar company.
So I appreciate both you and Hope for the incredible amount of work that you've put on this. I know Hope has been looking at this for years. Bridget, you're kind of brought in as a pitch hitter. We see how much capacity you have for gleaning through documents and just being able to connect the dots on the law. And I want to thank you on that as well. You have really made a difference. We are going to be shifting topics very soon. I'm going to see if we got another caller for you. Is that person coming on with us? Okay. So this caller is going to come on with all of us, and then I'm going to give you both sort of... Hang on 1 second, caller. Next Thursday, I know Out of the Box is going to be looking at this, and this is going to be a topic that will, I have no doubt, be filling the mindset of the island for a while, because it really has ramifications across all of the islands. And each island is pulling up these same types of issues. This is moving away from the plantation mindset and also moving away from high involvement against the environment, or, you know, because we need to be changing that.
Serious negative impact on the environment.
Do we have another caller?
So we're going to have lush, green, free, and natural habitat.
So, caller,
go to dry arroyos, yeah.
Do you have your question for Bridget? Second caller? Yes?
The water that the people think the water is theirs, but it's actually the earth's.
The earth, yes. The water belongs to the earth, and we all belong to the earth. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. All right. So, Bridget and Hope, I want to, because I have Kim Coco Iwamoto's discussion that she's running for lieutenant governor, so we're going to start with that pretty soon. Bridget,
okay,
I'll start with you.
Guys. Thanks for a great job, Felicia, bringing it to the public's attention. And without KKCR, where would we be, right?
Well, I think
much less enlightened.
I think okay, thank you. And KKCR is really filled and nourished by all the listeners and the parts of our community that bring the life to this. So it's a good nexus. What's the next step, Bridget?
Well, to be very honest, Felicia, the next step is to figure out what should be the next step. Mr. Bissell actually invited me to call him and come in and talk. And I think that's always a good idea. And based on the board action today, I'd say KIUC is for sure doing the right thing. And now we have to turn our attention to that 800-pound gorilla sitting in the middle of the room.
Get them permitted. Get them online, yeah? That's what I think.
Yeah, and get them sharing. Get them to where, you know, water can be used for agriculture and have some use for the DHHL beneficiaries, the 1,000 people that have been waiting to put homes on their land. Many of whom are now dying. They're so old from waiting. And there's enough water for them. There's enough water for all of them. That came out real clear. Kauai County Water Department admitted it to our county council on October 26th. People can watch the podcast of the Kauai County Council meeting 3 hours in on October 26th, and they can hear it for themselves. Mm-hmm.
And I've also put it on YouTube, so it's the concentrated piece.
Oh, that's right. So, you have it on your Facebook, I think.
Yeah, on my Facebook and on my YouTube, Felicia Cowden. Uh-huh. Marshall?
So, you know what I'm wondering just while we're on it is, if we manage the water on this island in the best possible way we can, all together, given the current...
climate change?
No, growth. Projections. Growth.
Oh,
projections
yeah.
For growth, for development. Can we reach sustainability? Is there enough water for the future, given the way,
You're talking to somebody who grew up in the desert, and I say absolutely yes.
Yeah,
there's plenty
of water here.
Well, I mean, if it's managed right. I mean, we had as many people on the island or more during the Hawaiian times, and I have to take that word back.
Makes it, the Hawaiian history establishes, Marshall, so many more lived here.
Yes.
And there was enough water for them, there was enough food for them, they were totally sustained by what the island produced. They didn't have anything imported.
And that's managing it. properly.
Yes. I have to say kalamai for using that. I've been called out for saying in Hawaiian times because that's like it's not the present. So it is still time with Hawaiians, but it's not Hawaiian land management practices. So in Hawaiian land management practices, we definitely had enough. Hope, do you have some final thoughts on this topic? And then I'm going to move on to our honoring our underwriters who bring this program on the air. And then we're going to listen to a discussion with Kim Coco.
Well, I'm just so grateful that we have action, finally, and I think we're being heard, and that's such a big step forward because it's been a really long time that we've been talking to deaf ears. So this is a whole lot of movement since Friday, really. I thought we won Friday. We didn't win the votes, but we had changes that were going to be implemented within a year, and I think the KIUC board realized that, and they decided to be proactive and start implementing them now. And they do represent the community. It's not a company, it's a cooperative. So it's time they start listening to their beneficiaries, and I really thank them for taking this action.
Yeah, it's very encouraging. And as a person who goes over, you know, for years now, and it is so expensive, and I gratitude to the sponsors that helped me the past couple of times, but it is exhausting financially for people to leave work or leave their families, what it takes to get over to have time to be able to speak. I do want to acknowledge that the Board of Land and Natural Resources didn't have a little timer on us where they stop you at 2 minutes even if you didn't get your point across, which happens a lot. So it was worth it going over.
Yeah, they were really gracious with the public police. You're right. They should be thanked for that.
Mm-hmm.
And the three board members who voted not to renew KIUC's permit voted with strong admonitions to KIUC, which obviously Mr. Bissell came home and shared with his board. They heard it. They did what, at least some of what they were directed to do by those three members who voted not to renew the permit.
So shout out to Kayoni Downing.
He said he would. Yeah.
Kayoni Downing, Jimmy Gomez, and then Stan Roerig. Stan Roerig
right.
typically has been... I didn't expect that out of him. He was really helpful in this case. So,
and
shout out to
Chris Yoon, who voted to renew it, was very strong on their need to meet with DHHL, their need to take care of DHHL beneficiaries now, and their need to get their environmental studies done. And he actually used the phrase, don't wait. So, it was... The board was receptive and did hear us, and like you said, they gave us a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
And we really appreciate that.
I want to also acknowledge Kaleo Manuel, who was he's our guy from the Department of Hawaiian Homelands before our topic even came up. He set up our conversation, maybe without even realizing, when he noted that of I think there was 9 applicants or 11 applicants for water permits, and only 2 had ever made an effort to reach to DHHL, and not with much vibrance in that effort. So that was a well-timed convergence of topics. So thank you both. So Bridget, thank you, and I'm going to let you go now.
Thanks to Hope. She's really carried the torch on this.
Yes, thank
She's
you.
She's done a huge job.
Thank you, Hope. Okay, aloha,
thank you,
Bridget.
It was a pleasure helping. Aloha.
Aloha.
And Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man and Edible Hawaiian Islands.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456. packyourtrash.org and saverseas.us.
Edible Hawaiian Islands is a subscription-based, advertiser-supported print and digital magazine, the only James Beard Award-winning food and drink magazine in the state of Hawaii. Edible Hawaiian Islands digital magazine may be enjoyed at ediblehi.com.
All right. Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Marshall, did you have a couple of updates for us?
Yes, Felicia. You may know that in Alabama, they are electing a new senator today to replace Jeff Sessions. And with 85% of precincts reporting, the Democrat, Doug Jones, is being beaten by...
Oh, I thought you were going to say he was winning.
No, is with 85% reporting, it's a cliffhanger. He is currently being defeated by a pedophile by about 0.7%. Yeah, accused pedophile, I should say.
Accused pedophile.
Yeah, sorry, get that right.
Yeah, and those accusations, I mean, while I don't like hearing what he was accused of, you know, most of those incidents happened a few decades ago when he was a young man. I mean, it shows a mindset.
Oh, in his 30s, right? What was that?
In his 30s. He wasn't...
Mid-30s, late 30s? No, and she was 14?
One of them, yeah.
One of them, 14.
Yeah, so, yeah, you know, so it's kind of...
That's a 0.7% race right now with getting close. So it is a cliffhanger. It's right there. You know, if Alabama elects a Democrat, maybe let's see what they've been missing. Oh, so the other thing is Obamacare, otherwise known as the Affordable Care Act, has not been repealed. It is still the law of the land. There have been some changes made, but the deadline to enroll, the open enrollment, is this Friday, December 15th, so you want to go to healthcare.gov and see what it might have for you, see if it would be a good deal. But also, if you currently have insurance under the Affordable Care Act, you want to go back and check it out because some things have changed. You may need to reapply.
And I did go in and try and apply, and I was unsuccessful at being able to do it. But then when I saw what is being put together by the Republican agenda, it looks like they intend to gut Medicare and Medicaid. And if what is accurate is being reported, and I can't know the real accuracy of it, they're saying that they're taking off Medicaid, which is something close to Obamacare, right? Like most people, is Obamacare like Medicaid? It's assisted, subsidized health care, right?
Yes, and it pre-existed. Existed before the Affordable Care Act, and what the Affordable Care Act did was give the states more money for Medicaid, what's known as the Medicaid expansion, which they had some leeway as to how to spend exactly.
So, you know, I don't know how much I trust the mainstream media, but like when I'm looking at the mainstream media, there's a lot of conjecture and explanation like it has already happened. I don't believe it has happened yet, but that they want to remove a lot of chronic care conditions like cancer from Medicaid and Medicare. And so that, to me, that's like a slow death or even not so slow death for people who aren't wealthy, right? You know, like if you take cancer off the table, I know with my own insurance, it's almost like catastrophic coverage because it costs, the copay is so much, I just don't go to the doctor. But if I did have a very serious illness, at least I know I have coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's unconscionable that they could take out some of these very serious illnesses, which is the main point of having insurance.
Right.
So made me be a little bit reluctant to be doing it.
Anything other than reinforcing and improving the healthcare system and the way we give people healthcare in this country is unconscionable.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you're saying it like fact, that's his opinion. I mean, my opinion is I would like to see a single-payer system, and then people can have additional coverage. If they want more, they can pay for it. But, I'd be totally happy if what I was contributing to was helping others besides myself. I would like to move on to Kim Coco Iwamoto. her and I got together earlier today, so this is recorded, and we're going to be able to do most of the recording. I really enjoyed speaking with her. She is running for lieutenant governor, and she will be, in fact, she's there now. If people are going to the Historical Society's event this evening, they are having Carol Yotsuda, who's from the Garden Island Arts Council. She's doing a talk on her experience as a child in an internment camp. And that is where Kim Coco is this evening, and she came over for that, but we had a conversation. So, Kim Coco Iwamoto, I am so happy to be sitting here talking to you, and thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Felicia, for having me on.
Yeah, it's been great. So, tell me, I've known a number of the lieutenant governors, and I'm actually really very politically involved.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, when people ask me, what does the lieutenant governor do?
Right.
I can't articulate it very clearly, because it's a little different than being the vice president of the United States.
Right. Traditionally, there are three aspects to that office. One is to process documents, like name changes. The second is they're a repository of public noticed meetings. They make sure that they're the clearinghouse that every publicly noticed meet that's required to be publicly noticed is noticed on their site. And then finally, they process or they monitor Hawaii administrative rules and the promulgation of that process. But that office can be so much more. Traditionally, we've seen lieutenant governors and even the candidates themselves are suggesting that it's a sit-and-wait kind of office, that they're thinking about being more of a silent understudy to the governor. And I see it as an underutilized, undervalued position. What I would like to do with that position is to make the lieutenant governor's office the people's office. It takes the whole half of the fifth floor, basically, of the Capitol. There's all that real estate, office staff. We could really make it the community center of the Capitol, where community groups, community activists come to gather and bring their ideas together, their solutions together, and when they're ready, they could summon up key legislators. They could summon over the governor. You know, it really will flip the script on that power dynamic.
Well, you know, I've just learned something. Thank you. And what is really good for me to be hearing and understanding is that I've thought of it as similar to the vice president, and typically the president chooses his, we've so far only had a him, his vice president. What is I like about what I'm hearing from you is that the people pick the lieutenant governor. So what I'm getting from this is even if the governor has a different particular viewpoint, it's almost good if the lieutenant governor is a gentle check and balance on that.
Absolutely. I look forward to working with whoever the Democratic Party chooses or the voters choose to be the Democratic nominee to the governor. I look forward to working with whoever that is, but I will always be working for the people. So that's important. And yes, absolutely. One of the things I've done in elected office or any kind of service I've served in the community is being really outspoken and frank, but also gentle in calling, you know, and setting a higher standard, a higher bar for my colleagues. I'm not really beholden to any particular group or even the political establishment. I'm really there to speak truth to power and to hold all of us accountable. And that's how I first got into office on the Board of Education. That was my role. I was advocating for students. And then I realized, you know, the Board of Education wasn't being really responsive. So I said, you know what, I think the students need an advocate sitting at the table holding their colleagues accountable from the inside. And so that's been my role, really, that I've developed.
Well, I think one of the reasons why I asked that question the way that I did is that on this show, Kauai Soapbox, I help to
express stories for people who have been struggling with different issues, maybe that the system doesn't address well.
Right.
And we spend a lot of time with both policy and the practical ways that that's expressed in people's lives. So
yes.
Many issues are here, from water to housing, and really houselessness is very, very profound here. I see it is on Oahu also.
We have the worst or the highest rate of homelessness per capita in the nation.
Is that right?
It's been consistent for many years now. It's very tragic and sad. And it's truly, it's a testament to our poor city planning. We constantly want to take affordable housing, break it down, and put public storage. So if you drive around Honolulu, for instance, everywhere you see a public storage facility, there used to be affordable housing on that footprint.
Really?
So now we'd rather have air-conditioned storage boxes instead of affordable rentals. Yes, and it's true everywhere. And then not only that, but we give a lot of those public storage facilities, we're incentivized by what's called real estate investment tax credits. So we actually reward developers for building those kinds of structures and tearing down affordable housing. The other issue, another contributing factor to the shortage of affordable housing in Hawaii are the transient accommodation rentals. The short-term rentals, Airbnb, the VRBOs, all of those, it's booming now, right? It's the technology. We're trying to meet the needs of independent travelers. But what's happened is, one example of what's going wrong, on the north shore of Oahu, there used to be 40 homes in the rental market. So people in town who couldn't afford to rent in town would go up to the north shore and rent something for their families up there because it was much cheaper. Today, there are 40,000 freestanding rental units on the North Shore that are now listed on Airbnb, VRBO, and I heard this from the state chief information officer mentioned this, and he wants to track the numbers to show how they impact the quality of life for Hawaii residents. But that's a clear example. All those homes are now being rented to short-term renters like tourists, and no longer available in the long-term rental market. This is what's causing this is what's actually facilitating a lot of homelessness.
And as you know, on Kauai, we have basically an extension of the same challenge. We don't really have Airbnb here very much yet. We've been able to not have that. And there's the big challenge of how do we blend it? Because people, their kids grow up, they rent out a room, it allows them to hold on to the farm, it allows them to hold on to the house. We are being pressured by this global economy in our little island home. And how can the state take actions that would be able to reverse that? Do you see a strategy for doing that?
Every community, I think one of the things we need to shift is the Oahu-centric legislative control of counties. We're allowing the state legislature to control a lot of what's going on with the counties, and that's one of the biggest problems. I feel like the transient accommodation tax needs to be bifurcated. There needs to be a county tax, and then there needs to be a city tax, and the amount that's collected is clearly identified. One of the things the counties can do to control tourism is that they can decide to raise the taxes, which will make it more expensive for tourists to come to Kauai, for instance, which will make the numbers go down. I know that's a concern for many residents here, the impact or the disproportionate impact tourism and tourists, their rental cars, the congestion they create in traffic or even in certain parts of the island like the North Shore. I know that these are all problems that locals are dealing with, and it's even having some potential safety issues with if there's a tsunami, how are all of these people in the rental cars and the local families, how are they all going to get out of those flood zones? right? I mean, so they're very real ramifications. And I feel like the local counties need to be able to manage that. And one of the ways they can manage that is to raise taxes. Countries like Bhutan, for instance, they have a gross national happiness. And one of the ways they control tourism is by charging a daily tax. And sometimes it looks like the amount of around $200-something if you calculate all the visa, the daily rates plus the taxes. So it's really substantial, but they're able to keep the, again, that disproportionate impact of tourism down so that the people of Bhutan, or in this case it would be the people of Kauai, would actually be able to preserve their quality of life.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. And we are speaking with Kim Koko Iwamoto. We're going to take a break, though, in a moment here to hear from the Department of Health that has... I am really, really happy to have this public service announcement. Marshall, you and I both have a big interest in rat lungworm disease.
Rat lungworm disease is a risk statewide, but we can all help right in our own neighborhoods by keeping our yards free of slugs and snails, using traps to catch rats and disposing of them properly, and always rinsing fresh fruits and vegetables thoroughly and carefully before eating or cooking. Let's work together to prevent rat lungworm disease. Find more information and tips at health.hawaii.gov, sponsored by the Hawaii State Department of Health.
Yes, we've done a number of shows on that, on why it's important to keep, really, the rats and the snails out of your yard and to be clean and healthy.
Oh, that's so great. We were calling for the Department of Health to put out some information, and they
did.
Yeah.
And
there is good information on their website, too, and there's printable signs that you can take and put up at your local community garden or whatever you like that, and also at kauai.gov on the civil defense page. They have information about rat lungworm. But right, we keep down the rat population. Without the rats, there's no disease. It has to go through, its life cycle includes the... Okay, we're not going
right.
to get
well,
into it.
Well, yeah, we're not going to go deep on that, but it is a big deal, and... You know, this has been on now for like a couple of weeks, and I'm really thankful because, you know, sometimes you speak up and you get heard, and we put mm-hmm. a lot of pressure to try and get that in here. Hey, mm-hmm. how's your race going?
Let's see. At the moment, it is 48.9% for Roy Moore of the GOP and 49.5% for Doug Jones, the Democrat. So he is currently on top by... Oh, my goodness, it's only a number of thousands of votes. It's still squeaker, but that's 91% of the precincts reporting. I got to say, he's been flipping back and forth. We still don't know, but at this point, it's Doug Jones on top.
And why that matters when we're looking at the Democrat, Republican, is that it might shift that strong majority in the Senate. I can't remember what the shift will be, but it is... It definitely matters in terms of a lot of these bills, like what we saw when John McCain had turned down the new health bill. That was a shifting moment mm-hmm. when you just had one senator mm-hmm. voting differently. So going back to discussing our next election cycle, we're going to go back with Kim Koko Iwamoto, who is... running for the lieutenant governor position for 2018. She's our first person that we have had on for that position. There, I believe, are six people running for lieutenant governor for the state of Hawaii, and we'll hear more from Kim Koko.
So I'm glad that you're really thinking about the housing issue, and you know, that's probably one of the very, very biggest core issues that... It's a spider web of issues, right?
Yes.
Like depression, drug abuse, poverty, housing, all merges in together, and we have, you know, challenges in all those areas. And just like when I look at how that flows, every pun intended, just having come away from this Board of Land and Natural Resources meeting,
right?
Water really is life. Water really is everything. And Have you followed what the challenge is on the North Fork of the Wailua River here?
Yeah, you know, it references back to the history of, you know, a big ag in Hawaii. And as we move away from that, I think we have a responsibility to look at other alternatives. I think we need to restore the Mauka to Makai waterways and restore all of the... We need to be able to restore the species, the diversification of species, and also we need to make sure that we have water for the to restore lo'i and the food. And we need to be able to feed ourselves. It's about, you know, when we talk about food security, it's about going old school, right? And about getting back to letting eating, you know, surviving off the land and tapping back into that cultural preservation as well. And the way families come together to work in the lo'i, the way communities get involved is really important. It's what connects all the everyone living in that particular ahapua'a.
And with, like, at least three major rivers somewhat diverted, and in all these different ahapua'a, when we put these ditch systems that drain it away too much, what we are learning, they probably didn't realize at that time, how it recharges the aquifers. And so as we, I see that on Maui and Oahu, I don't know about the island of Hawaii, but certainly Maui and Oahu, when they have these concrete awai, that really accelerates the challenge of not letting the water back into the awai. Have you been working on the water issues with the other islands as well? Because that really does affect everything.
Yes, I know about the restoration in Maui for sure. They've been successful with many waterways. The activists there are inspiring. And it's very interesting because, truly, as somebody who now lives on Oahu but who was born in Kauai, I'm so inspired by the activists and the Aina protectors on Kauai and Maui, even the Big Island, what they're doing and how they're taking leadership roles in the community. They're not relying solely on elected officials to speak for them, but they're really grabbing the mantle and insisting on being heard. And that's great. And I think we need to do more of that. And we think we need more allies on Oahu.
I have a request.
Yes.
I would really love to see the technology be added in live stream coming out of Oahu for what happens there, and then certainly to be able to have a TV screen to have people be able to do testimony.
Yes, absolutely.
There's
no reason with today's technology and the affordability of the technology to not have the voices of the people most impacted by certain legislation have the most say, and that for them to be heard without scrambling at the last minute to buy a round-trip ticket.
$400, it's easy to go testify.
It's so insane. It's really, your voices are being erased. And it does, again, it takes people on Oahu joining forces and saying, no, their voices count. And I've been participating in that speaking out for quite a while as one of the founding funders of the Hawaii Alliance for Progressive Action, HAPA. I've been able to partner with the community to get activists from different islands to come to the legislature at the last minute. And I've even opened my home to people. If they need a place to stay at the last minute, they are welcome. And they've stayed at, many people have stayed at my home in order to be able to testify. And, you know, maybe they can't get the last flight back or the earliest flight in. So I try to make it work.
Well, in doing a little research on you, because we haven't known each other long, or really, this is probably one of our first real serious conversations together. I've been, I will just say, impressed at your generosity. It looks like, I don't want to put you on the spot by asking what you do, but what I did learn, like, I put a lot of effort to help the preservation and perpetuation of the Hawaiian culture.
Right.
And we had this Papa Kui'ai effort with making the koi boards.
Right.
And Daniel Anthony came over here, and I couldn't believe how many people came out of the woodwork, every pun intended on that one, came out, and we were doing this beautiful work in harvesting trees that had become problematic, cutting them up into 4-inch, 9-foot slabs.
Nice.
So many people, and particularly of the Kanaka Mo'oli community. And do I understand that correctly? You were one of the funders?
Well, yes. So, in honor of my grandmother, who was the matriarch of our family, her name was Florence Uemoto. We created the Florence Uemoto Kauai Fund, and we're actually celebrating 10 years. And it's a donor-advised fund through the Hawaii Community Foundation. So I was the founding funder of that fund, and I'm on the grant-making committee. And we reached out to Daniel Anthony about working with him and to bring what he does. He's been doing this on other islands, and I thought it would be great if he teamed up. So we did actually a matching grant for Dan Anthony and his work based on Oahu, and then we paired it up with Malama Kauai to make sure that funding, equal funding, went into both Kauai, Kauai as well as his program. So it was a joint effort, and it's been amazing to see what he does, and it's about restoring the culture, eating healthy. It's
and making it part of the living, breathing aspect of the family's life, because a number of the groups that I have interviewed on this show, for example, the Kia'i from Mauna Kea,
mm-hmm.
like even they have felt strengthened in their empowerment by the Florence Iwamoto Foundation.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, and I saw the Lights on Rice. Did I see
Yes, we were represented. A lot of the people who received grants joined our contingent in the parade. It was so much fun to be a part of that. And again, it's really an opportunity to honor my grandmother. My family's business is Roberts Hawaii, and it has my grandfather's name. So my grandmother is often kind of invisible. She obviously did a lot. It's a struggle too for a lot of your small business owners understand the struggle and risk. And all the failures that one goes through in order to have a success eventually. She remembers that there were times where she had to knock on the neighbor's doors and ask to pick fruit from their tree, for instance, to feed her kids, to feed my father. There were times when it was really tough, and she relied on the community to come to her aid. And I think remembering that it wasn't always easy, and it's not easy for a lot of people, and doing what we can to kind of stabilize that social safety net that is ingrained in who we are, just as people living in Hawaii and our connection to each other as neighbors, but also kind of supporting the task that these nonprofits have stepped up to the plate to help serve their communities. We look forward to partnering with those kinds. I think we might have given out like 70 grants at this point, and we look forward to doing more.
Can you give me an example of what some of those are? You work with the foster care program, is that right? Or is that you personally?
Oh, that's more me. I just joined the advisory board of a program called RISE, which is addressing teen, young adults who are homeless. But, I've been a therapeutic foster parent licensed by the state of Hawaii. So that's something I've done personally. Many of them were previously homeless teenagers. So that issue is very close to my heart.
Is there a RISE group here on Kauai?
No, it's they're starting off where their assets and their resources are. So it's kind of very situational, and then from there, hopefully, they'll grow. But definitely, we need more resources to serve the homeless population in general. I mean, and it seems like the state, the feds, and the counties have been putting a lot of resources. It's hard to develop or to get. There's such a shortage of actual housing. So unless a developer is willing to come in and to compete with all the luxury development that's going on all the islands.
So do you have any experience in development or landlord-tenant relations? Have you done
It feels like you're setting me up.
I'm asking. It's a genuine question.
Yes. One of the businesses I have is I have an apartment, residential apartment company called Affordable Quality Rentals.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and 50%, more than 50% of my units are dedicated to previously homeless, as well as families who would be homeless but for their Section 8 subsidy. So again, I've been really in it for a long time.
Okay, so I'm glad to hear it. And so can you tell me this? What is affordable? Like if they're in affordable house, what does affordable mean?
Well, I'm going to say affordable means what the, in this case, I work with the rent-to-work program.
I mean, what does it cost? Is it $1,000 a month? Is it, you know, you're seeing these affordable houses and they're only $500,000, right? So people are working at $10 an hour. How do you get that, you
Absolutely. Know? Absolutely. No, I hear what you're saying. And it's an amount set by these agencies. They tell the landlords, you cannot charge us more than this amount. And I actually charge below the limit.
So what is that number
like? So for in Honolulu, so my building's in the urban core. It's like right near Ala Moana Shopping Center. So it's like a lot of my tenants don't even have cars. They use public transportation, which is great and which is ideal and what we want them to be in that situation. So let's see, for I think a one bedroom, it's maybe between 1,000, and depends on how recently it was renovated, between $1,000 and $1,200.
Okay, all right.
And then for a two-bedroom, it's maybe $1,500. And again, they're subsidized. And So I want to share with you an example of a family that moved into a one-bedroom, and he was actually rated for three-bedroom because it's him and three kids. And they've been living in their van for the last 3 years, even though he's been employed by the same employer for 7 years. So he is the working homeless that we hear about and that we know about. And once he was able to move in and stabilize his housing, he was able to show up to work more consistently on time. He got a promotion and three raises. Now he's not actually eligible for that subsidy anymore, which is great. So he's there, and eventually he'll feel strong enough to hopefully rent an apartment from a conventional landlord. You know, who he has great rental history. He has a great income history. And so if, when he's ready to move on, I can open that unit to another family.
Right.
So, I mean, this
well,
is...
Well, I congratulate you for that, because sometimes it seems like I will listen to people speak and there's a disconnect between the surface discussion of it and the actual implementation. So if you actually have a building or buildings that are addressing houselessness, then you have some experience in that. I've looked at the Housing First program, which means... Or you can tell us what it means if you know, like that.
Yeah, no, it means don't worry about any, you know, don't worry about anything else. Just give them housing. And then from there, you can find them when they need follow-up services, whether it's mental health services, medical services, you know, job training, job assistance, or any kind of services or safety net they need built around them so they don't fall back into the streets.
Right. So you're not telling them you have to recover from your alcoholism before you get the house. You get
That's
your house
right.
first, and then you're going to work on, or you can work on. And very often those problems resolve themselves because part of it is despair over a difficult living situation.
Yeah, for a lot of people. But for a lot of people, there are multiple layers of needs that they have. Right.
So can we talk a little bit about incarceration and mental health? Because I go regularly to court with people, and I will
so
say that people...
You're listening to KKCR, Hanalei KAQA, Kilauea, with Felicia and Marshall on Kauai Soapbox. And this, I did this earlier today. I love how you can hear the roosters there. We were at Kilohana. She had an event to announce herself for her lieutenant governor race position for...
Say her name again for us.
It's Kim Koko Iwamoto.
Okay.
She is from Kauai, or at least born on Kauai. Her family is from the Roberts Hawaii family. That's the family business. I think what I'm going to do, because I have more left of her interview than will fit on the show, I think I'm going to take a break here, and I will just finish it up. Next week we'll take about 20 minutes of the show, and we will finish up her conversation. Jazz with John is coming up next, and I wanted to be able to address a few other really critical things that are of interest on Kauai, and immediately we will hear the County Council report from John Gordon. Very, very thankful that this is something that we have the blessing of being able to hear every week. I would actually like to have stuff for the planning commissions and some of the other. I'd like to have a commission's report. But tomorrow I will be at, you know, the County Council meeting. It's going to be again tomorrow and on Thursday, possibly Friday. There'll be a number of amendments that come up. It's actually a very big day for it. If people do need to do some public testimony, Mason is going to take that early in the day. I will be down there at about 8:30. A very huge issue that is going to come up tomorrow, and then a good time to actually testify on it is Thursday. You could send something in, but it is, I will just tell you, it makes all the difference in the world to show up as opposed to just write in. Writing in is better than nothing. Both is better than either. But if you're going to do one or the other, show up.
What happens to those write-ins?
Well, in theory, they're read. But, you know, sometimes they'll get 100, 150 emails in a day, and that's why if you put in your subject line, I support, you know, support or oppose, it's also very good to say which town you're in, but it's, again, going on the general plan update. But what will be discussed tomorrow is this concept about removing the Princeville Phase 2 resort designation from the general plan for 2020. Last week we talked about that a little bit. Jake pointed out correctly that it has had that. It's had that for decades. And the math is what is so difficult on all of this. If they get this designation continued, because at one point they'd taken it off, then they're putting it back in, it's more than 500 new luxury resort units. And so that is not any kind of building for Kauai, and I mean Kauai residents. And there are 1,200 not yet built resort units already within and adjoining to Princeville Phase 1. So when we have that many units that are still waiting ahead of us, and it can take 35 minutes to get across the Hanalei Bridge, because we have so much traffic, and I think part of that is that we have a higher concentration of the visitors that come into Hanalei. And visitors, if you're listening, it's not that we don't love you. We do love you. It's just we need to have a good number so that when you are here, you can find a place to park, you're treated nicely, you're welcomed warmly, and it's comfortable rather than overwhelming to be with so many people. So that is one of the very big issues. I see that they are asking people who are in support of not having this be resort district wear green shirts. It's a very big issue, and this is mostly driven by the young born here crowd. So that is tomorrow and Thursday at the County Council buildings in Lihue. So that's one thing to think about. Now, Marshall, you've been following politics right on line right now, so give us an update.
Yeah, actually, it was brought to my attention by John.
Okay.
Jazz of John, which is coming up next.
John Gordon.
Yep. And, yeah, it appears that Doug Jones, a Democrat, has defeated Roy Moore, the sitting Republican, in the race for the, he's not the sitting Republican. This is an election to replace Jeff Sessions, who...
Right, it's like a special election.
A special election, exactly. So this is an empty seat about to be filled by a Democrat, and that will make a big difference in the Senate.
Is that a final?
That's final. Yep, so we had, 49.6% of the vote for Jones and 48.7% for Moore. It was a squeaker. It was a squeaker, they were saying it was really a vote to define who we are as Alabamans, that kind of thing, right? Apparently, they're not quite sure, but, getting there.
Yeah, I know the president was really, really hoping to have Roy.
Mm-hmm.
That's his name, right?
Roy
Moore.
You know,
I mean, I've been watching it, but I'm so focused locally. I watch it, and sometimes it's just hard to even watch. It's hard to look at what is happening on the national stage. You know, it's hard to look at what's happening to California.
Mm-hmm.
Burning hard. I was just talking to Kim Coco Iwamoto, who is running for lieutenant governor, about houselessness. And when I think about all these storms and all these fires, where does that money come from? Where do they create and solve these problems? You know, the insurance companies, yeah, things are insured, but insurance companies can go under. And what I saw on that tax bill, I was whining a few minutes ago about what is on that tax bill, is unbelievably taking out a tax break for storm damage. So if you contemplate that, you know, maybe you have a big farm, like some of these farms have caught fire and burned, your business could have caught fire and burned, you could take $3-4 million in losses. You should be able to write that off against maybe the $1 million that you made from your business that year. I think they're going to have to really rework it. But what I think that we're seeing a trend towards is this very hasty legislation that, they don't even read the bills before they vote on them.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems surreal. When I was a child, this is what we made fun of other countries for doing, and now we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But for me personally, that's a happy win. I'd like to see that change. I'm not going to hold my breath on it, because we could wake up tomorrow and they could have done a final count, and with that small of a margin, it could be changed.
Yeah, there could always be a recount, I guess.
But,
you know, it does really bode well for the Democratic Party for 2018 too. That taken together with Virginia is yay good. And you know what too, it really does it helps us to know where we're at as a country in terms of, is it okay to treat women the way a lot of men have been accused of treating women lately?
I can answer that.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Well, and the thing is this other guy, Doug Jones, he kind of has done a lot of really good things.
Mm.
So he's done some extraordinary things, like actually prosecuting and, I believe, winning against the person who blew up the church and killed those four little girls that were of African-American backgrounds. He did some really powerful things. So we had a squeaky clean civil rights Democrat against a person with a pretty sour reputation. So I don't know if that's a definitely apples to apples type of comparison between the national position for these things.
Oh, we're getting a call.
The Charter Review Commission meeting is on Monday, 4:00. I will definitely be going there, and I believe that we have a call, and we will take one last quick call before we have the county council report. I'm going to be at the county council meeting. I encourage people to participate, because that's the only way that democracy wins. What we heard about in the first hour here is a number of us went over and participated with the Board of Land and Natural Resources. And some water is going to be returned. Thank you, KIUC, for doing it voluntarily. To the aquifer, and we are working on Kanaka Maoli Hawaiian beneficiaries for Department of Hawaiian Homelands, backing you up, getting your farmland, getting your houses. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm going to give a shout out to Mel Raposo, even, who really was the one who helped to uncover that there is water even for those houses. Aloha, KKCR, you're
not
on the
Felicia,
air.
Felicia, Felicia, we don't
okay.
have them.
Oh,
no, yeah, did not want to go on the air. And
okay.
I apologize, I don't have time to talk right now.
That's what he said?
No, me, on the phone. He wanted to chat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But so you didn't have a specific thing?
I don't know, you want to talk with me.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah.
So thank you for
there he is,
calling that on, because when Marshall gets lost in a conversation, I get derailed. So we'll see if this is a quick piece. And then otherwise, we're going to be coming up to the county council report. And then Jazz with John. Okay. Caller, you got like less than a minute.
Hi, Felicia.
Hi.
I'm going to praise all you women, especially all, you know, Hope and you and everybody that went over to the meeting and is helping getting things done here on Kauai. Kudos to all the women, right?
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and the men, too, because kudos to all of the people that want to keep things intact, right, and so we can have harmony. But, you know, I found being a vegetarian since I was 16 years old, and I'm now 66, that I feel very awkward in talking to people saying, like, oh, I'm a vegetarian. You should be, too. Love animals, don't eat them. You know, I mean, it's like coming out of the closet.
Right. Have you heard the joke? Have you heard this joke?
To not feel like you're embarrassed to go, yeah, I'm a proud vegetarian. You know, well, yeah, you know, I mean, you know, I mean.
So thank you. Thank you for what you're sharing. I got to go.
Yeah, because even, you know, if I have a choice between taro and, let's say, you know, pig, let's say, or cow or whatever, meat, chicken, I'd pick taro any day of the week.
Well, that's a great note to go out on. Thank you so much. Aloha.
Bye-bye.
So, Marshall, welcome home.
Thank you so much, Felicia. It's great to be here.
Yes, and there might be time next time. I'm going to sit there and ask you a little bit about what your observations of the East Coast were. You know, it's always nice to get a firsthand report.
Mm-hmm.
So, listeners, mahalo nui for being a part of Kauai Soapbox and KKCR. Jazz with John is coming up in a minute. Here's the county council report. It's kind of short, but a lot's going to be happening tomorrow.
Aloha, everyone.
Aloha.